Wendy, Linda, Paige. Just want to introduce the panel to you. The panel is led by the chair of the cluster, Minister Gugile Nkwinti, and also the co-chair of the cluster, Minister Pandor. Without further ado, I'll ask the minister to lead the cluster media briefing together with the other members of the cluster. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Once more, good morning, ladies and gentlemen of the media. We will distribute a relatively lengthy document. We just go to a summary of that. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, today's economic sectors, employment and infrastructure development cluster, it builds on the commitments made by the President during the State of the Nation address. The cluster's work is central to help realize the radical socio-economic transformation of South Africa. The major issues raised were accelerated land reform, scaling up of black industrialists in the economy, scaled up industrialization through accelerating investment and support for small, medium enterprises and cooperatives. There has been improved policy coordination, infrastructure development and skills development. Advances have also been made into the lucrative economic sectors of the ocean economy and tourism, industrialization and unlocking the potential of small businesses. The cluster is confident that the 9-point plan is diligently setting in place conditions to meet our national development plan's goals of poverty reduction, economic growth, and job creation. The 9-point plan has committed the cluster to transform the agricultural sector through the rollout of agri-parks in 44 districts, fast-track the implementation of strengthening relative rights of people working the land, that is the so-called 50-50 policy, at 10 pilot sites, and create jobs through the production of key commodities. Additional 53 proposals will be finalized by the end of June. This is a radical socio-economic transformation, as referred to by the President. The revitalization of agricultural sector is expected to gather pace with the recent launch by the President of Operation Bakisa for Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development. Changing the model of fast-tracking producer support and development finance, providing targeted support to smallholder and large-scale commercial producers. Key commodities will include livestock, grains, and horticulture. Implementing the improvement plan for smallholder producers with market focus and accelerating land delivery and beneficial support services. Ladies and gentlemen, you will recall that on Friday, during the Operation Pakistan launch, one of the major steps that were taken there was the signing of a memorandum of understanding between South Africa represented by the Minister of Agriculture in Sozokwana and China on beef exporting from South Africa to China. It's a major development. The target of the cluster detailed in the 9-point plan is to scale up industrialization by reviving industrial parks, establishing black industrialists, expanding industries, supplying the infrastructure build program, investing in manufacturing sector and setting up special economic zones across the country. The Black Industrialist Program supported 27 entrepreneurs, leveraged 2.5 billion rands in private sector investment, and created 5,235 direct jobs. The intention of the 9-point plan is also to facilitate an investment-friendly environment through the one-stop shop established in KwaZulu-Natal, Gauteng, and the Western Cape, the one-stop shops. This year, we will launch the National Investment One-Stop Shop. Already, we can look forward to a current investment pipeline of over 45 billion rands for the coming year. As part of improving the investment climate, government will be working with the World Bank on reforming the ease of business indicators. The nine-point plan set out ambitious targets for the ocean's economy and the development of infrastructure to serve the oil and gas industry, to service, rather, ship and boat building and aquaculture. This is a very, very a strong development. There are strong developments here, big developments around boat building. Already South Africa has manufactured a couple of them and exported them to the continent. The class is pleased to announce that its steady work in the ocean economy has increased this sector's contribution to the overall economy, 4.6% of GDP and 413,365 jobs. The increase in tourist arrivals between January and December 2016 to more than 10 million people highlights the potential of the sector as well. Small businesses can make a meaningful contribution in empowering people and drawing new entrants to the economy. It is a focal area of the nine-point plan, which targets removing regulatory constraints, assist through 30% of state procurement and development of a framework to strengthen and regulate the informal business sector. Amended Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act regulations, which provide for 30% set aside for SMMEs and cooperatives, are in place. A firm commitment was made to South Africans in 2015 to resolve the energy challenges and ensure a reliable long-term supply. Through the nine-point plan, South Africa has a stable and reliable supply of electricity with an excess capacity of over 3,000 megawatts available. These advances are as a result of a number of investments in energy infrastructure and bringing new capacity on stream. They include, amongst others, the following: new capacity from the Jupi Power Station, 4 units from Ingula Power Station and Sere Wind Farm to the extent of 2,226 megawatts. The investment of 96.8 billion rands during the construction of the Dupi Power Station, thus creating 15,181 job opportunities, of which 7,496 have benefited young people. In addition, 103.9 billion rands was spent on the construction of Kusile Power Station, thus creating 1,826 jobs. Our flagship renewable energy independent power producers procurement program has been instrumental in augmenting the capacity of the state to rapidly roll out regenerating capacity. We have unlocked 200 billion rands in investment commitments to create more than 115,000 jobs and invest in communities over the lifespan of the project. The 54 operational projects produced 2,900 megawatts of installed capacity. The REIPPP is also the base for the first bid window of the coal independent power producer, ICP, with investment of 40.4 billion rand. The cluster welcomes the agreement on the national minimum wage of 20 rand per hour, which will benefit an estimated 6.6 million South Africans. It will advance the country's efforts to address the challenges of wage inequality and labor instability. Overall, we expect the minimum wage will increase the buying power of 6.6 million South Africans, leading to greater economic activity and help stimulate the economy. It will also help reduce inequality in our society, which is seen as a major obstacle to economic growth. The intention of advancing beneficiation is to expand current support measures to attract downstream value-adding manufacturers, increase the levels of local beneficiation of the prioritized minerals, namely iron ore and steel, platinum group metals, polymers, titanium, upstream mining inputs, and the energy value chain. Significant progress was made in the platinum and fuel cell sector, with the platinum special economic zone to be designated and a major investment by a fuel cell manufacturing investor that will make South Africa home to Africa's first fuel cell manufacturing facility. The cluster has been working hard to open new growth opportunities through STI, that's Science, Technology and Innovation, that was identified in the 9-point plan as key to advance inclusive socioeconomic development and transmission. Local knowledge and innovation is being used to revitalize agriculture through agro-processing technologies linked to bioeconomic strategy and to revitalize mining and mining equipment manufacturing through focused technology development programs and new industry development through targeted mineral beneficiation. The broadband rollout and the lowering of data costs remain a priority to support radical economic transformation. An investment of 1.9 billion rand over the next 3 years will be made to roll out broadband in 8 rural districts as part of a first phase. Progressive partnerships are being sought to connect the rest of the country. The national government has worked with 6 networks to roll out free Wi-Fi in highly populated public facilities over the past year. The Bulawayo Rail Development Corridor is another strategic transport infrastructure project. The South African National Roads Agency Limited, SANRAL, has commenced with the planning phase of the project to upgrade the Bulawayo Road. The project will stimulate the regional economy between the Limpopo, Mpumalanga and Gauteng. The upgrading of the N2 Wild Coast toll road, including 410 kilometers of road and construction of 9 bridges, is underway. It will serve as a catalyst for regional economic development and link communities to job opportunities in the tourism and agricultural sectors. Recent rains have supported the drought relief effort, and the national average dam level is currently at 67.1%. to capacity compared to 54% at the same time last year. Water efficiency programs will continue addressing the unaccounted for water that is estimated at 7 billion rand a year, and the War on Leaks program is expected to play a significant role in this regard. This year, the program will train an additional 5,000 young people as artisans and plumbers. In conclusion, ladies and gentlemen, in the year ahead, the cluster will strengthen the implementation of the 9-point plan with a concerted effort to promote labor-intensive projects that target unemployed young people in particular. The successful implementation of the 9-point plan will draw more South Africans into the economy and pave the way for a new chapter of radical socio-economic transformation. The economic sectors, employment and infrastructure development cluster will continue to use the economic levers that are available to it to ensure that we achieve the desired inclusive growth. We encourage all South Africans to work with government to help move the economy forward. Thank you. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Any questions?
Thank you. Thank you, Minister. Before we invite questions, I neglected to introduce other members of the panel. Just introduce Minister Mildred Olifant, Minister Tila Ngesi, Minister Lindy Wezulu, Minister Rob Davies and Minister David von Rooyen, who are also members of the cluster, and I also introduce Minister Jeremy Peterson. Can we take a round of questions, starting with Victoria? Yes. If you can just indicate your name and the media house you represent.
Linda Ensor, Business Day. One understands, I don't know who will answer, but one understands the fiscal constraints, but there seems to be very little alignment between the radical economic transformation announced by the President and the budget. Very little or nothing given to Black the Black Industrialist Program, very little to small business development. How does one actually further radical economic transformation without the funds? Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions in Cape Town? Yes.
Marianne Merton, Davy Maverick. Just a curiosity.
I see your media statement is classified confidential. What is the reason for that, and would any one of the ministers perhaps reverse this classification? Thank you.
Thank you. We can just take questions in Pretoria. Linda?
Morning, David. We've got one question.
Okay, thank you.
On the industrialization and the linked infrastructure, one of the programs that very clearly identified is renewable energy. And over the years, a number of investments were made in inverter factories, for instance, in wind power facilities. And because of the delay, some of those are in serious distress. And now we hear that there is this continual link between that policy of industrialization and infrastructure, but you must take account that investors must be wary now that next they are asked to invest in localization capacity. They have to be wary about whether those policies are being implemented. Can you give assurances now that the renewable energy program is truly on track? CS can put out another opinion piece yesterday saying that they can only connect with the scan and pay that they can afford it, but they have a surplus. And then I also noticed in your statement no mention of grid infrastructure, and I think that's a major gap at the moment in the light of the integration not only of renewables but also of future gas-based development. I know DTI has got a big gas industrialization program, but again, there's a credibility gap there because we've seen no program coming out of the RTC office because of the delay that happened in renewable energy. So I'd just like to understand how you're going to be closing that credibility gap around localization and the fact that these programs are infrastructure actually aren't moving ahead as planned. And secondly, it wasn't in the statement, but I'd like to understand South Africa's approach to protection of certain industries where jobs are at risk. In particular the poultry and the steel sector. Other countries have taken quite rapid steps, especially in the steel environment, to protect the industry. But there is a resistance locally amongst downstream producers to the increasing tariffs. But we seem to be taking a very long time in getting to the point of deciding whether we are going to protect our primary producers and in turn how are we going to protect with our upstream manufacturing industry that may be affected. So if you could just give some updates, especially on the steel protection, where that's at. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Thank you, Minister.
The confidentiality is not applied. It was applied before we came here. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Colleagues, please respond.
Well, the chair's assigned me to go first. Let me say that I think that the statement that was made by the president in the SONA about renewables, where he indicated that the REIPP was very much in force and that the commitments that were made in the last bid window needed to be followed through, I think those were very, very important statements of certainty. I know that the Minister of Energy, is she here? Oh, she's there. She can give more details of the discussions that have been going on to implement that. But I do think that the uncertainty, I will acknowledge that the uncertainty has had a wobble in that industry. I think the good news is that the new integrated resource plan envisages a higher level of renewables in the period, the next IRP period, and that this should enable us to understand that renewables will be an important part of the energy mix, and that within renewables we need to have industrialization and components that can support the generation of wind and solar power. That those components, at least a proportion of them and a significant proportion of them, need to be localized in this country. That's where we come in. So we've been working to try to ensure that there is certainty in that regard. I'm sure Minister Jumat Peterson can speak more about that. So let me then come to the other one. I think that does come to a broader question, and that is that we are aware of, and I'm going to the portfolio committee, and I'll say this again there, we are aware of a number of glitches or inconsistencies in the application of localization, and that one of the targets that we will be setting ourselves as a department this year is to ensure that we iron out those. So that we don't have where a localization decision is taken by government, that localization decision is followed through. We know that there are cases, we've heard of cases even from the work that's been done by the portfolio committee, where black industrialists, serious black industrialists, have found themselves not getting the access to the contracts, and some of those are given to other people who are not actually producers and industrialists, and I think we want to make sure that these things don't happen, so we actually do support, use procurement as a tool to support actual productive players in the economy, and particularly industrialists. Then the question of the poultry and the steel came up, and I think in both of those we've got abnormal circumstances in the trade environment. It's not normal situations that we're confronting. So in the poultry, the issue, I think we've highlighted this on a number of occasions, is that there is a consumption pattern in the developed world which consumes a higher proportion of the white meat and always generates a surplus of wings and legs for brown meat. And there is attempts, there are attempts over time, this has happened in a number of cases, of countries with a surplus of brown meat trying to export it. The marginal cost of the cost of getting it there and any contribution it makes to revenue is better than the next alternative, which is to turn it into pet food. And so this comes in at very, very low prices and has undermined poultry industries. In my own speech in the SONA, I made reference to the early 90s, Ghana, the Ivory Coast, and Cameroon, which were countries who had their local poultry industries decimated as a result of this. So I think our position is that we do see an abnormal inflow of this brown meat, we have introduced a provisional safeguard measure. We introduced that at the end of last year with a request to ITAC to come up with a longer-term figure that they're going to come back to with in July the level of the safeguard duty that we will impose. We're in a lot of discussions with the European Union about that, because this safeguard measure has become available as a result of the EPA. I think our overall objective, and we've said it very frankly to them, is we're not going to see the local poultry industry decimated. We do acknowledge that there are productive issues of competitiveness that we have to address, and that's why we have a task team in place, but we can't allow the industry to simply be disappeared as a result of these imports, and the surge of imports in particular. We can't allow that to happen, otherwise we won't have an industry to raise the competitiveness of. As far as steel is concerned, I think you know it's a question of the glut of steel. We have in fact taken a number of measures to support the primary steel maker in South Africa. We've introduced quite a number of tariff issues there. We've made a number of tariff decisions. We've also changed the designation of local steel for localization requirements in the infrastructure build program. We've had to do this against also the background of the competition finding about collusion on price. And so we've been seeking a price regime with the largest steel maker in the country. But we are aware of the fact that the downstream industry is also important and affected. And in fact, the downstream industry is more job rich than upstream steel manufacturing. But if we don't have upstream primary steel manufacturing in South Africa, we've got a terrible disruption to the industrial sector. I'm informed, for example, that even if we made a choice, which would be a stupid choice for an iron ore country that's seeking to beneficiate, but if we decided to say we're going to let primary steel manufacturing go in South Africa, we don't have the capacity in our ports to import the volumes of steel that would be required for the downstream. So it would be a stupid choice to let the primary steel manufacturing go. But I am happy to say that the last few tariffs that I've signed off, they're probably not actually yet enforced. They have to go to SARs and have to be put in the book, but I have signed off, and these are tariffs for downstream, for two manufacturers, wire manufacturers, and others. And I think we're trying to have a whole industry or a whole value chain approach, and so that we reduce the number of conflicts that there are between upstream and downstream by having an approach which is looking at the entirety of the value chain. These are not easy choices. There are other applications that are before ITAC, and of course we have to observe the propriety and move on those. Just on the last one, on the issue of the resources, I can say that the Black Industrialist Program has got resources, and of course if we got more, we could do more, but we do understand that there are fiscal constraints that we have to operate within, but they're not stopping us from doing what the DG announced a few weeks ago. The first phase of the Black Industrialist Program envisaged us rolling out 100 Black Industrialists, supporting 100 Black Industrialists over the NTF period, over 3 years. As the document that you've got tells you, we've done 27 so far, and the financial year is not yet over, so there's another month. I'm sure we'll make three, so we've hit the 30 that we're supposed to hit in this financial year. But we've actually said that instead of 70 more over 2 years, we will now do 70 more over 1 year. So that target has been set for us now, so we are accelerating the rollout of the program, and in the portfolio committee later on I will try to demonstrate that these are actually serious and significant industrialists. We'll try to profile two or three of them. These are people that have taken risk, are personally involved, and that this is industrial activity that we are supporting. So I think that this is a program of quality. Thanks.
Minister Peterson.
Sorry, I'm standing because the seats, there's quite a number of ministers here. Thank you. I think we had engagements with ESCOM, several engagements with ESCOM and the Department of Public Enterprises on the Renewable Energy Independent Power Producer Program. We have agreed that the cost pass-through for the Independent Power Producer Program is in line with the MYPD or the multi-year price determination MYPD-3 methodology. The cost recovery mechanism will be dealt with through the regulatory clearing account of ESCOM. The decision of the Gauteng High Court with regard to ESCOM's recovery of its funds through the regulatory clearing account has made it difficult for us to give ESCOM an additional budget. I think why I'm explaining this is because ESCOM has repeatedly mentioned that they thought that the renewable energy program was unaffordable and that there needed to be some mechanism for them to recover the costs. We have ascertained that through NERSA and the MYPD-3, there is a cost recovery for them. Last week, NERSA also announced that if there were any implications for the financial sustainability of ESCOM because of the renewable energy program, ESCOM could make an application to NERSA which would explain the risk, the financial risk to ESCOM, and NERSA would consider this at a later stage. So we are convinced that the impasse between the Renewable Energy Independent Power Producer Program and ESCOM as that deadlock has been broken. We are confident that the gas IPP program is well on track. We'll be launching that soon. ESCOM has repeatedly said that it will not delay the implementation of base load that would include coal, gas, and any renewable energy program which included base load. The concerns, however, were for the wind and solar energy. I think that clarifies some of the concerns people have on the IPPs.
Thank you, Chairperson. If I may answer the question that's related to small and medium enterprises and cooperatives. As a department, we're confident that we can try and use optimally the budget that we have received, and we're also basing ourselves on the fact that we're not in isolation from the overall government budget and other departments. There has been a haircut for almost everybody, and that also affected us as a department. And we have, obviously, there was a nominal increase, if I may say, and also we had a budget cut of about 30.6 million, an increase by 6% to counter inflation. Having said that, we must also look broadly to the fact that the budget for small and medium enterprises is not just about what you see within the Department of Small Business Development. In almost all the departments, you will find that there's a lot that can be accessed by small and medium enterprises as well as cooperatives. Our responsibility as a department, other than looking at the legislative environment, the regulation, the coordination between the three spheres of government, is to look into all the budgets and say what's in there for small and medium enterprises and the opportunities that present themselves in all the different departments. I'm on record from the very beginning when I started in this department to say that I don't only look at my budget for increasing and upscaling the support to small and medium enterprises, but I also look at the entire government. And the fact that we've got this 30% procurement is what we need to change, particularly as a department, to say how do we ensure that that's implemented throughout the three spheres of government. But even that, how do SMMEs access that? Where are the SMMEs? What is the capacity of the SMMEs? And if we're talking black economic empowerment, where in particular are your black small and medium enterprises and cooperatives? How do you harness them and make sure that they're ready for the 30% procurement? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I just want to briefly respond to the notion that the budget announced last week doesn't respond to the key priorities articulated by President Zuma. In fact, it does. If one were to itemize and extract all the economic objectives that were indicated in the SONA address, you would identify that land redistribution and land reform in an enhanced fashion is dealt with in the budget. The provision for skills development and education has been addressed in a manner that I think is very responsive to the public demands that we've had in the past 2 years. On expanding the commercial base of agriculture through drawing in smallholder farmers as producers, we're seeing a movement there, and again the budget seeks to support this. The Youth Work Opportunities Fund responds to the need to increase youth employment in our country. The ongoing implementation of the Black Industrialist Program is part of what is supported through the resources we have available in government. And then, of course, the PICC projects, the Strategic Infrastructure projects, which we see as a significant contributor to job creation and business development in the country, the area of water resources, and particularly the announced inskilling of greater numbers of youth in the water revitalization program, and of course the innovation through science and technology, the creation of the National Health Insurance Fund, which I think is a very important step forward in the NIH program, and the announcement of the phased introduction of NHI schemes, beginning with pregnant mothers this year. the state procurement boost for small and medium-sized enterprises is an important advance. And of course, as Minister Zulu said, and as you said in the question, we are in a constrained environment, but I think what we're doing is with every cent and rand that we have, we are dedicating our resources to support growth and to move us from the low growth trajectory we've had for the past few years and to really boost business. So what we need to see beyond the announcement of SONA and beyond the budget is also to see the private sector in South Africa responding to what we all need to do in order to achieve the levels of growth that our country requires. You would have noted from the speech of the President that in terms of board membership of directors, women still are a minority. You would note that at the management level in the private sector, we haven't got yet the level of representativity that we should have in South Africa. So there are areas where SONA has pointed to challenges, but these will not be responded to by government on its own. We need to see this emerging partnership between government and the private sector strengthen into real radical change within the private sector to ensure we see the level of empowerment and representativity that all of us desire in our democracy. Thanks, sir.
Thank you, Minister. Thank you.
Thanks, Minister. If I can just ask for one more round of questions, invite one more round of questions in Cape Town to the economics of the ministers, and then we'll go to Pretoria. Yes? You can just mention the media house that you represent.
I will do so. My name is Wendell. I'm Minister, David, just briefly, the notion of exports is something that Mr. Nkwinti touched on. The 60,000 ton that President Zuma mentioned, exports to China of red meat. My understanding is that we have a surplus of red meat to export simply because of the drought. So there's a lot of carcasses that have to be cut up and stuff like that. But what about developing the domestic market? It will be seen to have an unhealthy sort of a focus on exports all the time, but without developing, let's say, the red meat market specifically domestically. I mean, just a point of view on that. The next question is to Minister Van Rooyen and Minister Zulu, please. Now, Minister Zulu mentioned something along the lines of, you know, we shouldn't see ourselves in isolation, other parts of government and stuff like that, but you were two the ministers that did not stand up during the budget speech. Are you of the opinion that the Treasury, and by extension the Finance Minister, is a hindrance or an impediment to the radical economic transformation that is being articulated by government? The third question, if you don't mind, and this is broadly to the co-chairs and possibly to a pro and a anti or whatever you want to look at it. To what extent is the sort of the machinations in government and in cabinet particularly hindering government's objective to deliver? I mean, how can you, if there's disunity, and I think obvious disunity across government, and particularly in cabinet, how does that affect your work? Are you operating in a not operating in a vacuum? Thank you.
Please ask questions related to linked to the cluster media briefing. Yes. Next.
Good morning, Minister. Paul Vecchiato from Bloomberg. Minister Chima Peterson, just could you give us a bit of an update on the update of the IRP process? How far are we with it, and when do you expect that the new IRP to be completed by again? And then following on from my colleague's question, there's a very fractious relationship between the Minister of Finance and the Commissioner of SARS. Have you, the economic ministers, discussed this? And could you tell us if you're concerned about this at all? Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions from Cape Town? Last question.
Thank you very much. My name is Tuwasa from the SABC. Mine is quite broadly, probably maybe the chair and the deputy chair can answer, the co-chair can answer this one. are you satisfied that the current political situation or environment and our levels of growth provide you enough space to achieve all the objectives you have just laid out there?
Thank you. Linda, questions in Pretoria? Okay.
Terence Creamer again. As Minister Zulu mentioned, the preferential procurement set aside of 30% is a major change and puts in the hands of that minister a large resource potentially to support small business. Can she give a figure to what that could be yearly, that 30% set aside, and also what mechanisms she's going to be putting in place to matchmake those small businesses with the large receiver of those contracts, so that there is this flow through? Thank you.
Thank you. Those will be all the questions. Thank you, Minister.
Okay, let me just, I don't know why it was referred to me, a question about agricultural products, but exports, I think, are exports of agricultural products. They're bringing good value. And the issues, and I think that was what was signed with China, they're usually about SPS matters, not about tariffs. So SPS, sanitary and phytosanitary, and an understanding of these are the issues, actually, in international trade in agricultural products. One of the things I should have said in the poultry question that came earlier was that, of course, the reverse trade would be very attractive for our poultry producers if we could export white meat into the EU, into the US and everything. And the problem is, let me just talk about the EU, is that we had an outbreak some years ago of disease in the ostrich industry, and that has led to the exclusion of our poultry as well from the EU. So under the EFA we actually have duty-free access into the EU, but we can't operationalize it until the EU comes out and certifies all the abattoirs and everything. So I think that we had a discussion with the ambassador a little while ago, and I said, well, you know, we're very keen. How quickly can you do this? I didn't get a clear answer about how quickly they can do it. But obviously, I think if the trade is a one-way trade in brown meat, and we can't access the white meat the other way, that's another indication that this is not a normal trading environment. This is a distorted environment. But usually, in the case of these agricultural products, the prices are the reason. The prices mean more revenue, means more jobs. And more capacity that we can build on. So I think that the agreement with China was a good outcome. Of course, we need to ensure that we do not prioritize international trade in any product that undermines our food security. We don't do that. But export markets and export products are very important in the agricultural and agro-processing value chain. So I think it's, and exports generally actually are very important in value-added production, not just because of the export earnings you get, but also because that is a way you become quite competitive, and that enhances your own capacity also to produce for the domestic market. Those are the points I wanted to make there. I think I've gone earlier because I need to leave in about 5 minutes, but so let me stop there, and thanks very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I thank you for the questions on the integrated resource plan. We are going to de-link the IEP and the IRP each other. So the IEP, the integrated energy plan, will be going through cabinet and the parliamentary process much quicker than the IRP. The IRP will be subjected to rigorous and extensive consultative processes. We would like to avoid any legal challenges in the future. We would like to have a transparent, all-inclusive, and a very objective process for the IRP. We would not want to be accused of rushing through the process. we know that this will determine the future of our country in terms of economic growth. The resource plan will be in line with the National Development Plan. The 9-point plan commits us to solving the energy challenges of our country. Now we are not only solving energy challenges, but we have to ensure that within the next 30 to 50 years, we have provided for the potential growth, economic growth, but also for the lack of significant growth in our country. I hope that assists you. Once we have convinced ourselves that we have sufficiently consulted with all stakeholders, we would take it through the parliamentary process and back to cabinet. Thank you.
Thank you very much. In answering Victoria, the figure is around 150 billion. The bottom line here is that it's comforting when you sit in the economic cluster and you realize that all your colleagues actually have that in their minds, and the DGs and everyone in the department is now going to be assisting us in the implementation. Obviously, it's not going to be an easy thing because, firstly, as I said earlier on, the small and medium enterprises and cooperatives themselves have to be ready for this, and I know that many of them are ready for this. They've been waiting for this for a very long time. As a department, we also will identify, we've identified the specific sectors where we think that this can apply very much is in the areas of construction, infrastructure, and all the programs that the government has in place. We're looking at all the PAKISAs, whether it's Operation PAKISA, or whether it's the PAKISA on the oceans economy, agriculture. We participated last week, for instance, in the Operation PAKISA on agriculture, and even there we already were having the conversation about what is Operation PAKISA got to offer for small and medium enterprises, and how are we specifically going to be assisting them in the implementation of the 30% procurement. There's a lot of work that we need to do, but we're ready for it. The encouragement is for us is finally this has been decided upon, and now we can be able to implement it. As to why I didn't stand, I think that's not a question to be answered here.
The question to you, Madam Minister, was whether you thought that the Treasury and by extension the Finance Minister was an impediment to the radical economic transformation.
Okay. Well, look, we're part of the Mincombat, and we participate in this, and quite frankly it's very difficult for small and medium enterprises, and when you have this kind of a haircut that cuts across despite the fact that you're a new department, you need to set up and all that, but we understand the fact that we can't isolate ourselves when there isn't enough money in the kitty. We can't behave like a bull in a china shop and expect somebody to make the money when the money is not there. We're very conscious of that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. As far as I'm aware, there are no machinations in cabinet. I'm not sure what that means. We sit in cabinet meetings, we deliberate on matters, we bring to cabinet, we agree, we disagree, we change, we compromise, but cabinet is functioning and we're all doing the work that we are supposed to do. It's not practice in cabinet for us to bring any of our institutions' matters into a cluster. So if I had a concern with my DG, I would not take it into a cabinet. It's a matter which probably the President would be involved in. So we are not in discussion about finance, ministry, and so on. The current political environment, well, I think it's quite an interesting one, with the changes, particularly Ms. DeLille in the Western Cape. We wonder where she's headed to next. But looking at all of that, government must function. We have programs to implement. We have strategic plans and annual plans. And we continue to execute the work that the nation has assigned to us.
Thank you very much, Chair of the Cluster. I just wanted to reinforce the response made by Minister Davis. As we said, it's very clear, Chair, that our nine-point plan set out very, very ambitious targets. In Italia, some of those targets are meant to enhance, the export market. Of course, we are looking at products generated through this ambitious target of the nine-point plan to be exported outside. So, as you are all aware, the export of the red meat is something that has been ongoing. It's not like a new thing that can be easily be reduced to something that is induced by drought. And we think that it should be looked at in that particular perspective, where the meat that is being exported, the deal that has been made with China, is not drought-induced. It's something that is there because of partnership, the trade partnerships that we are currently striking with individual countries, but also as part of the BRICS bloc. So we see more of such items being exported. It's not necessarily something that is induced by drought. I thought it's important that to emphasize that it's not a drought induced. So this might have a very negative impact on some of the products that we take outside our country. And it's a call also for us, to get our narrative correct. We can't say we are making a deal with China on the basis of the carcasses that came as a result of drought. That's a very unfortunate question.
With all due respect, that is something that came from industry. It's not something that I'm talking out of my tongue.
Correctly so. That's why I say let's get the narrative right, because if really we are all concerned about the growth of what we produce, let's get the narrative right, both the industry and ourselves, that's what I thought clear.
Thank you very much for attending the media briefing. The purpose of the briefing was to brief the public through you, the media, and don't hesitate if you need further information that you want to follow up.
Sorry. Okay. My questions are not answered.
Your question?
I asked a question that, given the current political environment and the current levels of growth,
yes.
Describe the current political environment you're referring to, because it may just...
I'm referring to, there are all reports that there might be cabinet reshuffle, especially as, with Mr. Prime Minister being...
as long as you are in the executive, the expectation is you will continue to do the job you have been assigned, as long as you remain in the executive. As far as I'm aware, we are all in the executive and we're doing the work that we're assigned. So the matters you refer to, which are in the newspapers and media reports, do not impact on our daily functioning. I answered your question earlier.
I heard you talk about Patricia Deligne.
You asked very little about those political machinations. I know the ANC is the bigger and better party, but we should spread our political net wider.
You see, ladies and gentlemen, we're coming to the end now. Just remember this, what Manelis is asking. Just remember that perceptions play a very big role in the economy, anywhere in the world. Perception. Now, if there would be perceptions out there, whether they are real or perceptions in the true sense of the word, they might have that impact. to the extent that that is the case, we are conscious of our responsibility as government of ensuring that we respond to those. Look at the way in which collectively, as members of cabinet led by the Minister of Finance, we engaged with the rating agencies when they were here, all of them, all three groups of them. And we're very frank with them on this question. We're very frank with them. And we were very open. And they accepted our bona fides. And you all are witness to the fact that we were not downgraded. It's because of that frank interaction that we had on this particular question. Thank you.
Thank you very much, everyone. The briefing is closed.